Say hi to spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.
Welcome to another episode of Golden State of Mindcast. Nate, Bram, and Ivan are here with you. I'm back after a brief hiatus. You guys, you know, really, really held it in without me. But you got the Ivan light blaring from the top of a skyscraper in San Francisco. So I'm back. Try to keep us in line. No more talk about sad children. I mean, unless it comes up, it might come up. Warriors are 45.
You can't fight the flow of conversation, you know.
I'm going to try. Warriors are 45-4 after beating the Wizards Wednesday. We're recording this on Thursday. So today they got to spend the day hobnobbing with the President of the United States, which is always fun when you win the championship. But even more important than President Barack Obama, they got to hobnob with David Lee, getting back the full squad at the White House. What do you guys think about seeing all those images of the crew together, and it looked like they were having a good time in the White House?
You know, if your team is at the White House, they just won a championship. That means they're, you know, they get to stand it, you know, among the shoulders, among giants. So I think that's pretty awesome. I think, you know, I don't really put too much into David Lee being back there. I'm sure there will be like more stories coming out about it. That's kind of what I look forward to. Like, if the guys enjoyed it, great. Nice that he gets the recognition. Justin Holiday was also back. I think Justin Holiday is awesome just as a human being. So it was good.
You know, another thing that just came, I think it was yesterday or maybe it was this morning now. There were rumors that David Lee is probably going to either get traded, if that's even possible again, or get bought out. And I hadn't even thought about it until now. Like, would they bring him back just as like an end of the bench guy for the locker room? Like, you know, friends of Steph and like, you know, towel waving extraordinaire.
I thought I saw something that they can't, but I also am like not obviously an expert in this type of thing, but somebody on Twitter said that they can't bring him back yet. And again, like I blindly believe everybody on the internet, so sure. I'm just going to go with that.
Twitter is the ultimate source of truth these days. It's true.
But if they could, I mean, like, it, I don't know. It's such a funny thing where, I mean, think back to the beginning of last year where the only reason that Draymond started was because he got hurt, and then how quickly things have changed where Draymond is now first-time All-Star, you know, universally beloved semi-face of the NBA along with Steph and Clay a little bit. And it's just so funny to think of David Lee as a little bit of a cast-off, but at the same time, I mean, if he did come back, where would he fit in? Would he take Jason Thompson's minutes? Or, I mean...
Well, I don't know about minutes. It could take his spot on the bench, but...
If we're going to bring David Lee back, I demand that we bring Kent Bazemore back as well, purely for his towel waving.
I can get behind that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Also, he's blossomed into a heck of a player too, so...
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. How cool would it be to, like, just... If they do get Durant, which I know we'll get to this eventually, but and then they need to like fill out the other positions in the NBA. And I know that salaries wouldn't necessarily work in this scenario, but then they just bring back like Bazemore and Jeremy Lin and Kuzmic and like a couple other people and just make the all bench team. And they're just purely waving towels.
we're already going crazy here. Let's stop talking about David Lee. And let's talk about the Warriors beating the Wizards last night. I didn't get to watch the game, so I don't have anything interesting to say other than I was looking at the box score, and obviously it was a battle of point guards. Over 40 for Wall, but over 50 for Steph. I ask you guys what happened in the game, I saw that something floating around on Twitter. I believed it, but I also checked afterward on basketball reference. So Steph has four over 50 point games, which is good enough to tie him with, let me pull that up again. He's tied with Kevin Durant, the aforementioned, Karl Malone, Moses Malone, Bob McAdoo, Larry Bird, a few other guys. There's a number of people above him on that list of 50-point games. It blew my mind. Michael Jordan had 31.
Jeez,
31. He had more than Wilt Chamberlain at 30.
I was about to ask who had the most, and I was assuming it was Jordan, but he had, man, that's just,
it's
that's
incredible.
Just, you know,
this is a total tangent, but I have to say it, because every time you look up a record, I swear Michael Jordan ends up being the top of the list and like blowing away the competition.
Yeah,
just,
it's almost
that,
almost
that guy
any
was
stat.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like almost any stat. That's just remarkable.
Kids out there, he's not just a crying Jordan meme face on Twitter.
That's
like,
true. I mean, how sad is it that his legacy, I mean, everything that he did, and now in this modern era of our lives, he's known primarily for crying and turned into an internet sensation. And
yeah, his
face
shoes,
is just
his
plastered
shoes
on.
And he's that image.
It's just shoes and crying.
Shoes, yeah. Shoes and crying.
Oh,
and
boy.
Like a historically dysfunctional Charlotte team up until fairly recently.
Right.
Right.
Number three on that list, by the way, is Kobe Bryant with 24, which is pretty incredible. That's as nice. Well. I had no idea it was that high.
How many did Wilt have?
Wilt had 30, one under Michael.
Wow.
You know that Michael knew that.
I was
he
just
was,
thinking that, yeah.
You know, he was at 29 and he was like, nah, I got two more in me.
Well, or he was at 30 and he was like, I have.
He probably
I mean,
had
he
a
just...
broken leg and the flu. Rick Barry, number four on that list at number 14. Nice. So a big drop off after that, but we don't need to go on about it. Just an indicator that Steph Curry is as good as Steph Curry is.
Yeah.
He's nowhere close to getting to that number, 50 plus point games. So pretty fun there. So what happened in this game last night? Nate, you were just talking a little bit about it. Sounded like Steph just went off in the first quarter. And
yeah, the first quarter was remarkable. I mean, you know, it's part of the, you know, we're talking about like, you know, great performances, greatness in general. You know, you can still catch yourself just expecting every shot to go down, and games like last night happen, and you're just like, this is about what I expect now, which is hilarious, but it's true. And you know, we can also think back, like it still wasn't 37 in a quarter like Clay had. I mean, we witnessed a lot of amazing things in the last year and a half or so. But, you know, when Steph is in that zone, there's just nothing more beautiful in basketball today.
Yeah.
Who's going to guard him? What are you going to do to scheme against him when he's like that? You know, John Wall, and crazily, John Wall played what some Wizards fans believe is actually one of his best games of his career last night. And I agree. It was probably the best game I've ever. And when I say best for John Wall, probably the most complete game I've ever seen John Wall play. He had, 41 and 10? It was quite an amazing performance. He showed that he's expanded his shooting range. He showed that he can drive to the bucket. He can finish. He can pass. I mean, that was the John Wall that everyone was hyped up about when he was drafted. And Steph Curry drops 51 and makes him like a footnote. And that's just how amazing Steph is. And it's where you separate the greats from the all-stars in games like that to me. And I think that's what happened. Was the whole game like, I was just, I don't know, Bram, maybe you want to weigh in. Like I was telling Ivan, like, if I don't know necessarily that I would tell him to watch the entire game. I mean, maybe the first and fourth quarters. The third quarter was excruciating to me.
Yeah, that was the weird thing about the game is that, I mean, Steph came out and just obliterated common sense within the first 5 or 6 minutes or whatever, you know, to the point that SB Nation NBA editor Seth Pollock weighed in on our back end Slack channel and said something to the effect of like, do you guys ever get tired of watching Steph shoot like this? To which we all were like, what?
Are you crazy?
this is a trick question. But no, I think that there was a strange flow to the game in that Steph came out and shot lights out and scored 26 or whatever it was in the first quarter. And then surprisingly, the Wizards kept it close. And I think a lot of that has to go to John Wall and that he kept his team. I mean, I think I saw something today that no other player on the starting in the starting unit scored over 10 points. The only other player in double figures was Bradley Beal, who was coming off the bench, who's been working his way back. So, I mean, it really is a testament to the type of game that Wall had, but it's a bigger testament to kind of two things, which is that, one, Steph is crazy, and everything he's doing these days is just beyond what we can imagine. But then, two, is that the game was much closer than I think a lot of people assumed it would be after Steph had that type of quarter that he had in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And I mean, even into the third, into the beginning of the fourth, there were periods when the Wizards cut it to 6, I think was the closest, or 6 or 4 or 6, something like that. But then the Warriors just, I mean, and then they just pulled away and suddenly it was 13, 15, 16 again. And then the game was out of reach, you know, so it was a strange game.
It kind of sounds like we've talked about this before on the podcast about how sometimes the Warriors will do something like Steph having a crazy first quarter where it's like it kind of floors everybody or you know, they get up way ahead and it's like, you know, after it's like a barrage of three-pointers and then there's just this kind of lull of like, well, that happened. Like, I guess what do we do now? Let's you know, wait this game out.
Yeah,
like,
I think especially
it'll just end soon, right?
In opposing arenas too, you know, because how many times do the Wizards fans get a chance to watch Steph, especially on a night where he's firing on all cylinders, and he came out and did that, and everybody was just at a loss.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, man, we have 3 more quarters to play.
Right.
And so then the game happens, and then John Wall has a certain level of pride that he's not going to just sit back and stargaze while Steph goes off. So then he's trying to go off. And I mean, luckily it turned into a good game, but you're right in that it's because it's something that hasn't really been seen on a consistent basis. Point in case, Donyell Marshall and Kobe Bryant own the top 2 3-point shots made in a single game at 12, which both of those were kind of fluky, I would hazard to guess. But Steph is hitting between 6 and 10 on a very consistent basis, and opposing arenas see that, and it's just like, what do you do, you know?
Right, and I think that part of it is like there's not that kind of normal rhythm of an NBA game isn't there, and so that's for the opponents, but also for the fans, and so the energy in buildings is kind of like, what did we just see, and like now what do we do? The normal things that you would get buzzed about. I mean, kind of going back to what Seth Pollock is saying, like, you know, if a guy hits 35% of his threes normally, and then one day hits like, you know, 11 out of 16 or whatever, it's just like, it's even crazier, you know, because it's not supposed to happen, but the fact that it just keeps happening, and every time he shoots, you expect him to make it, and like it's kind of hard to like figure out that rhythm, like figure out how to act properly in that situation for fans too. I mean, like I said, it's we're still kind of getting over it. We don't know how to deal with it as Warrior fans. I do want to talk about a different guy from Washington D.C. We may reference Kevin Durant. A lot of stories this week about you know, that the Warriors would be the front runner if he was looking to leave Oklahoma City next year. I mean, it's all much to do about nothing because we don't know what's going to happen. Like, it doesn't seem super likely that he leaves, but and it's all, you know, hearsay for now. But it's hard not to talk about it. It's like it would be a landscape changing thing if one can even have such a thing in a situation where the Warriors are already, you know, above and beyond everybody else. The Golden State of Mind community already weighed in quite a bit, but Nate, what do you think? Like, would you take Durant if it meant losing, as it was suggested, Barnes, Bogut, and Iguodala?
That is so difficult. So I guess first I'll start by saying, like, reading all those, I think there were like 1,000 comments in the last day or two about this. One thing I just want to clarify, I think, because it's a point that I think is important when people talk about this. You know, people are saying that Durant coming would disrupt the chemistry of this championship team. And I think at least the more nuanced argument, in my opinion, is that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right. So it's not that Durant's going to be a locker room cancer, which he has never been in his life. It's that, you know, you have something good going and you really don't want to break it up. And we waited so long for something good. We could win another championship. I think if we don't win another championship, and this is so silly, I know, but if we don't win another championship, I would be a little bit more excited about breaking the team up in that way for Durant. If we win a second championship, I really want to see if this team can win a third. And that is not like a very sophisticated, statistically correlated to anything argument. It's just like, you know, this is what you build a team not to, it's something else I think fans also get lost in. You build a team not to see how many different combinations you can get. You build a team to win championships. So if you're winning championships, it's hard. It's just really, really hard to then break that up, even for a player like of Durant's caliber. I think that's just a totally emotional argument. Obviously, I would love to see. I mean, can we imagine just a lineup with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green? Like, I feel like one of the three of us could be out there as the fifth guy and make it work. Like, I would just love to see that team. So
you've never seen me play basketball, so
I actually am not. That's a good point. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough one. I would not be opposed to it, but I'm not going to sit here and say it's a slam dunk move when you're giving up guys. You're giving up your defensive backbone in some sense in Bogut and Iguodala, who was the Finals MVP. I think it's just we saw in the Finals how much we needed some that depth. You know, Bogut was not effective. We had Festus Ezeli to step up. Iguodala was the best guy to guard LeBron. And so you start to talk about shaving the kind of depth you have to shave for this. It's hard to swallow. That's kind of a long-winded way of saying I can't commit to that right now. After the season, I think I'll be better off.
Yeah, no,
I'll have a better sense.
I totally feel that, but at the same time, I mean, Durant is still... what is he, 27 or whatever? He's like Steph's age. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Bogut and Iguodala are both on their way towards getting a little older, kind of throwing Barbosa in that crew mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, it's funny to talk about this now, given that it probably won't happen. And if it does happen, then we should all just quit and we should just lay down and, you know, give up, because that would be ridiculous. But that being said, I think that in a completely sterile environment where you're just looking at, you know, how would it affect the team and who's leaving and who's coming on? I mean, I think it would work in the sense that that Durant is younger. I mean, he's Steph's age or somewhere in there. And some of the other players, I mean, they're going to have to go at some point. They're not going to be on the team forever anyways, you know? So as we start to sign players to more longer term deals, and as Steph's deal comes up, which of course they're going to give him all of the money in the world forever in a year or two, whenever he comes due. I think that it's definitely going to be something that Bob Myers and management is looking at. You know, can they get Durant while keeping Ezeli? You know, can Ezeli replace Bogut in the starting lineup? How does Durant's presence affect Green at the power forward? Like, is Durant going to be purely a shooting, you know, small forward, all that stuff? So, and again, it's so funny to even delve into it, because it feels like such a dream, and at the same time, the last season feels like such a dream. And so at this point, and Steph's ascendancy to the pinnacle of the NBA feels like such a dream. So at this point, I you can't rule anything out, because like the best case scenario has happened every single time so far in the last few years.
For me, it's like definitely the age thing is there, but you know, you look at Bogut, he's got what, 2 years left on his contract after this year. Like, are they going to bring him back anyway? Like, if Festus, assuming Festus actually, you know, is proven to be healthy, and that's actually, he's kind of got this knee problem right now that nobody actually knows what's going on with it. You know, he's already kind of the heir apparent of Bogut. Iguodala has one season left. They could certainly bring him back. He's in great shape, but he was kind of worn out a little bit last year. And that could still happen this year. So, you know, you start looking at it. I totally agree. I love the idea of, if they win the championship this year, can they win it again next year? Just bring the same group of guys back and, you know, kind of work with what you already know is great. And, you know, even if you can bring in Durant, like it doesn't feel as, I don't know, noble or something.
Yes.
But you know, again, like this team, it has a pretty good window right now compared to most championship teams. But but those guys are going to go eventually anyway. And so if you can replace them with Durant, I mean, and especially looking at the money that Barnes is going to get, you know, if they match the deal that he's likely to get if he gets a max contract, you know, they're basically paying. They're not going to be paying Durant money, but you know it's going to be this huge chunk of money for Barnes, who, you know, he's a great fit for the team. But
I think obviously they're going to wait. I mean, not the way that it's structured now, they're going to wait to see, like, whatever happens with Barnes, they're going to wait to see what happens with Durant. You know, I mean, if Durant says, "Hey, I'm interested," obviously Barnes is gone,
right?
You know, so. Right. I mean, and all of this is just predicated on whatever Durant wants to do, because it's the same thing with LeBron. Like, when you're at that stature, you go where, I mean, like, wherever you want to go, they're going to make it work. Right. You know, if he wants to go to Miami, Pat Riley's going to pull some strings and like make the salary cap functional. I mean, where literally whatever team he decides to go to, or if he wants to go to, you know, where, again, Washington, like DC, his hometown team, they've been, you know, game planning for this for 2 or 3 years. If for whatever reason his old high school teacher comes around and is like, "Man, we miss you in DC, you know? And he's like, "Man, you're right. I got to come back to the home front, you know? I mean, wherever he decides to go, it's his choice. And it was the same thing with LeBron 2 years ago or whenever it was, when he ended up going to Cleveland. It's like, after that decision gets made, all of the other cards fall, you know?
Right.
And that's what's going to happen in this summer, is that Durant's going to make his decision wherever he feels is the best fit, you know, whether it's staying in OKC or even signing a 1 year deal in OKC, like what LeBron did, and just like keep waiting for the salary cap to kind of keep going up. There's a lot of different options.
Yeah.
Although, you know, again, I think that the Warriors are the most, I mean, obviously for us, the most intriguing destination for him, but,
Well, I think for basketball fans, I mean, who wouldn't want to see that team of players?
I think a lot of people wouldn't, honestly. Like, really? I think that we're a little blinded by the fact that if that happened, that obviously we would A, get to cover it, and B, get to watch it every night. But I think that if that happened, a certain subsect of America would just give up, or like some like, what is Philly going to do? You know,
that's true.
Like, there's a lot of teams in the NBA. I mean, most of the teams in the NBA. What are they going to do?
I've already seen I saw some rumor on, you know, I don't know, somebody was floating around that they'd been talking to GMs around the league and them, like, kind of honestly, like, considering just, like, waiting the Warriors dynasty out, you know?
Yeah, because it was Zach Lowe. Zach Lowe reported that. Yeah, and that's fascinating, right? I mean.
Yeah, totally.
If you're building a team, you're thinking about salary cap stuff. Like, are you just saying, let's just plan for like 5 years from now and hope the team crumbles and they go away rather than trying to beat them?
Right. Like, so they've already given up. Like, that's insane. Yeah. We'll see if that actually happens, and we'll see what happens at the trade deadline if we want to talk about that a little bit. Just the last thing on that is what would be super interesting to me is if, you know, Bram is saying this is up to Durant, like Durant makes the choice here. If Durant was like, "Yes, I want to go to Golden State," and they're like, "You know what? We're not going to do it. We're not going to break this up. Like, we'll match the contract that Barnes gets, like $20 million to Barnes, just to keep this team together and win another championship with the team we have."
But,
like, that would be insane.
Yeah, but the thing is, knowing Jerry West and Lacob Lacob loves to make a splash. Like, let's not kid ourselves. Lacob wants to make headlines. You know, like, them signing Durant is the biggest story of the year. Bigger than the presidential candidates. Yeah. I mean, like, if Trump got elected, that'd be like close to like, like, you
we're
know.
Not, I know what you're trying to do here, Bram. We're not going to go down that path. We're not going to talk about Trump on this podcast.
I'm just saying it would become an international story, for better or for worse. Probably for worse in the case of the latter. But please delete all of this. but like, it would be a huge story, you know. And I think that. As they move towards getting their new arena, if they could if they could move into their new arena, assuming that it happens in 2019 or whatever year they're aiming for now, with a core of Curry, Clay, Draymond, and Durant, I mean, that's just stupid.
Yeah,
that's crazy. I mean, and there's no way that they don't do that.
Yeah.
There's no way that any of the people who are involved in the front office or ownership look at that or look at the GSOM comment threads and it's like, you know what, we should really keep Barnes for continuity. It's just not, I mean, like, you know, it's a business, and if you have one of the arguably three best players and the other best players on your team as well, so you have two of the three best players, like, you're gonna make a crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
From sponsorships and ticket sales, and they're going to jack prices up going to San Francisco anyway. So, I mean, there's no way they don't do that deal.
And while it is, you know, it's not without risk. You know, they're like Nate said, the depth is going to be a problem, but, like, I mean, they're still going to, like, that's a crazy lineup. Like, that's probably the best starting lineup ever.
Right.
Right, with Azealia, I'm assuming,
by far.
In there.
Or yeah, one of you guys. Like seriously, it's insane.
I'll play center.
Yeah.
I just got weight. I took a physical, man. I'm like 152 with boots on.
Thank you, Brio. I do have to add, though, yeah, because I think this kind of gets glossed over. Bobby Marks, now the Vertical, formerly New York or New Jersey Nets front office, wrote on the Vertical yesterday that they can actually keep Bogut in the scenario if they use the stretch provision, which means they take that money and they stretch over a number of years to break it down, like, super simply. So there is actually a scenario where they would keep Bogut and get Durant, which I think would be additionally insane. They could also renounce Asbestos Azili if he goes somewhere else. They could also keep him and keep Bogut instead of Azili. So there's some, like, a little bit more wiggle room, but they would also have to renounce Spates, Barbosa, Rush, McAdoo, Clark, Jermaine O'Neal, and Kuzmich to free up this money. So,
well, a couple of those guys you could bring back on minimum salaries. Like, you think that Leandro Barbosa,
right,
wouldn't just resign?
Yeah.
Rush, I mean, McAdoo, those guys will happily win a number of championships at the end of the bench. Like,
right.
That's not a concern,
right.
But
yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting, like, you know, the thing is, they pulled off that trade for Iguodala. They pulled off the trade to trade Biedrins for to get Iguodala, which I still don't even understand how anybody came up with that math, but
dude, shout out Bob Myers.
Right, you know?
Yeah.
I think, like, if anybody can figure this out, it seems like the Warriors front office can figure it out and make it work and build a winner. You still got Looney, and then you still got a draft pick coming up this year. So, I mean, if they score again with late round draft picks, I mean, they could, they could have a legit rotation.
I just want to say that I'm super excited about Looney. Can I just throw that out there?
Absolutely.
Like, I think that Looney is going to be a legitimate NBA player. And by a legitimate NBA player, I mean, I think that he's going to be a definite part of the cog or the wheel or what have you of this team moving forward in some capacity, you know, be it backing up Draymond or what have you. But I think that he definitely has a future in this league. And I think that the Warriors were very lucky to get him.
I agree.
Yeah, me too. It'll be interesting to see how he fits and what he actually develops into, because he's such a mystery right now, but just like raw talent in a unique body shape, and like, the, you know, Kerr and the Warriors could do good things with a guy who could defend on the perimeter and potentially hit threes and rebound like crazy. Like, you know, he doesn't have the same kind of skill set likely as Green, but it'll be something different, right? And
completely. I mean, nobody has a skill set of Green.
Nobody.
His own situation. I also think that it we're lucky as fans, and specifically as Warriors writers, that we, you know, like, normally when your team is in the lottery, you know, part of what you're able to write about is the mystery of this new young, like, D'Angelo Russell or whoever, you know? And we have this, like, high caliber, mysterious 19-year-old who we can write about. But we got him at the end of the draft as a champion because of his hip situation. You know, it's like, I do feel that he is one of the most talented, maybe seven or eight players that were in that draft. And because of his physical situation fell. I really do hope that it's almost like he fell right into the perfect situation. And in 5 years, you know, people are looking at the Warriors the way that they look at the Spurs. And it's like, man, how did they draft that dude in the second round who just, you know, stepped right in and filled up the box score. So anyways, that's a very long winded roundabout way of saying, again, shout out Bob Myers. So,
yeah. And just to put one last point on the Myers love, the fact that we're talking about Durant coming to the Warriors next year and like doing so potentially without missing any of like the best players on this team, you know, it's like usually like we're already such a better team than every other team out there except for the Spurs. And they kind of built that without like mortgaging the future, right? And we could continue to get better without even mortgaging the future even more. Like it's incredible that you could potentially get the second, third best player in the league without like, you know, losing one of your top players too.
So I'm gonna take a little bit of a stretch and we'll see where this goes. But so now we're talking about the Warriors being this highly functional, highly tight-knit, like very synergistic entity between Kerr and Bob Myers and Lacob and everybody who's involved. And yet it was only, you know, a few years ago that the Warriors were described as incredibly dysfunctional due in large part to the Mark Jackson tenure, of which there was a recent interview with Scalabrine. And I just felt maybe we should talk about that for a second and just sort of take a minute to understand how far we've come and kind of look into, well, I'm not even going to say it. I was going to say something that would slant the conversation unnecessarily before we get there. So does anybody have any thoughts about that interview if you've listened to it?
I have. I mean, looking at just the bare bones of it, this is certainly a one-sided conversation because this is Scalabrine, you know, giving his take on the situation and, you know, from a couple of years ago. And, you know, he seems like a pretty humble guy and all that. But at the same time, he got fired in a bad way. And he kind of, part of what he was talking about with Mark Jackson in that situation was that he felt like Jackson kind of derailed his own career, his potential career as a coach, because of, firing him, you know, right before the end of the season or whatever it was, demoting him to the D League. Like it was a really weird situation that he probably could take extra personally, you know, and extra defensively and kind of have more of a bone to pick than maybe some others that were in a similar situation just because of the exact circumstances. So it's hard to like take it, you know, without some salt. I will say that the thing that stands out to me is kind of how tricky it is for a team and you know, Bob Myers, you know, he obviously knows what he was doing. Joe Lacob, you know, knew what he wanted. And the guy, the right people weren't in place at the top. Or at the coaching position and figuring out how to resolve that and get rid of all of those, you know, Mark Jackson and his assistants and bring in Steve Kerr and the people that they brought in, it really is a testament again to their recognition of what needed to be done there. And at the time it was a very controversial firing. Like Jackson was seen as a pretty good coach. He got them playing defense and got them to a place that they hadn't been before. And they still fired him. And it was just like this recognition that like, oh yeah, this isn't going to work. And we do have something special. And that was one thing that was super interesting about Scalabrine. He came to the team cause he thought that was a championship caliber team years before they were.
Right. And I think that was one of the most damning parts of that article. And again, this is assuming that what Scalabrine is saying is basically true, which you can make your own decisions on that. But that he, like you said, Scalabrine came to the team because he thought that they could be a championship caliber team and that Jackson basically didn't think that. Like that he didn't think that the team was that good. I thought was one of the more interesting quotes that came out of that interview.
Well, they weren't under him, but
burn.
Nate, did you have any thoughts about that?
I think the thing I've said all along is, you know, Jackson was very much just in terms of looking at like leadership dynamics. I think that the thing that they wanted with Kerr, and I think when you look at, we talked about how they've made all these moves and these amazing decisions. I think, you know, Jackson was kind of very much, he wanted to be the guy front and center. You know, the buck stops here. I'm not going to say my way or the highway, because I don't think he was necessarily that kind of guy. But he was a very much, he seemed to be, and you can determine this from his comments maybe after, he seemed to be a very ego-driven leader. The difference, I think, between him and Kerr, more than anything, is that Kerr is very much a collaborative leader. Like, there's so much that he's done that wouldn't have happened without his type of leadership style. They probably, you know, a lot of coaches would not have gotten out of that Memphis series last year in the playoffs. And, you know, I think Kerr's ability to reach out to others, to sort of make sure he's able to communicate and see the big picture and communicate that big picture vision to others, work with the front office in terms of their vision. You know, he's just able to bring everything together and make it stick. And I think that's where Jackson kind of failed as a coach with the Warriors. And so I think what Scalabrine is saying is it's believable in part because it kind of fits with some of the other stuff we know about, we already know. And so it's a narrative that nicely fits the framework we're already working with. I'm with you and others. We talked about this, you know, in our Slack room. I mean, it's one of those things where it would be nice to hear the other side of that to really figure out where there might be some sour grapes from a fired person, from a fired employee, and where there might be some fuzzy memory and such. But I don't know. It's certainly an interesting story. We've said this before. I still find it really interesting that we cannot, no matter how successful this team is, they cannot escape the Mark Jackson story.
Well, because he brought them to the doorstep.
Yeah. And so that's just fascinating to me. I just really struggle to remember another time in sports where the previous coach, who was not there very long, you know, he was only there a couple of years or 3 years, you know, how the previous coach cast such a shadow over
his head. I unfortunately have the perfect analogy for you.
Go for it.
Harbaugh.
Yes, but that team was not successful afterwards.
Well, yeah. from a coach casting a shadow
a shadow over a team that actually went on and won in the next regime. Like, normally people would say, hey, this new guy is so great, let's forget the past. And this is a situation where it's not like he's not a legendary coach in NBA circles by any stretch of the imagination. He is a total novice coach, essentially. And he's still this guy we're still talking about, and still like tons of intrigue and drama around this story that I think we'll probably never really get away from.
Because... Well, and it resonates throughout the rest of the league too. Yeah. I mean, for example, Mark Jackson signed with LeBron's representation.
Yeah.
I think with an eye towards then coaching the Cavs, but because of everything that happened with the Warriors,
right.
Dan Gilbert, the owner of the Cavaliers, was not, and the GM who's there as well, they were not going to give Jackson a chance to coach the Cavs, and so they ended up firing David Blatt and promoting Tyronn Lue.
Yeah,
and it was a very interesting story about how Tyronn Lue wouldn't sign with LeBron's thing, and it's just like all these weird. Scalabrine in that interview talked about how like nobody walks away from this completely clean,
right.
And that's very true.
Yeah,
I mean, Mark Jackson's career and image have been changed for all of time, you know, as we move forward, because I think that as you look at him and as you look at what he did with the team, I mean, he accomplished so much, but then, you know, it speaks volumes what he did not accomplish. And, you know, even just watching the team is just such a different experience now. You know, you see all the back cuts, you see all the weaves, you see all the motion and the movement and everything that they're doing. And then you go back and watch tape of those old games. It's like Harrison Barnes, like, ISOing whoever was on him and, like, like Steph just standing in a corner, not moving. And it's just, it's sad. It's really sad to look at that. So well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that he will get another head coaching job, but I just don't. I think that, again, like nobody leaves that scenario unscathed. And I think that now that the Warriors are successful, that people feel emboldened to come out and speak their mind, you know, in the case of Scalabrini, obviously, where now he's like, well, look, I wasn't wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, all these things that I believed in are have come to fruition and before they were good. And I had to fight my own head coach to try to say that. And this is why I got fired. And I mean, that just rings of, it's a very strange situation.
Right. Yeah. Well, and just to answer Nate's question about like what, like it's impressive that we're still talking about him. And a big part of that is because he's on ESPN, he's on ABC, like in their number one booth, and he's talking about it, and he can't stop talking about it, and he digs himself an extra little hole every time that they, for some reason, keep putting him on Warriors games. But anyway, let's move on from Mark Jackson.
Before we do move on, while we're still talking about commentators on ESPN, I was watching the game, and I wrote down this quote from Doug Collins because it was so beautiful, and I just want to say it real quick. Steph had just hit a series of shots, and Collins said, quote, "He cuts your heart out and then he stomps on it, but afterwards he's really nice to your family." So anyway, so now we can move on from everybody on ESPN. I thought that was the perfect quote.
That is
Steph, so.
That's nice.
Amazing. Hey, when we talked about doing a podcast this week, the reason was we wanted to talk about this OKC game that's coming up tomorrow. And so like 40 minutes into the podcast, we can finally talk about it. So clearly the third best team in the league, at least in my mind, I think that that they're better than the Cavs right now, especially considering all the crazy stuff that's been going on with the coaching there. And in really any other season, I think the Thunder would be heavily considered a championship contender, you know, and the third best team in the league. Of course, they're a championship contender. And it's just like, it's not it, the Warriors and the Spurs are just having too ridiculous of seasons for people to even be talking about the Thunder seriously as a contender. Is that right? Like Bram, what do you like? Do you think that they should be in that discussion, or are we just, you know,
I mean,
all
of course, there's no way that a team with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook can be counted out if everybody's healthy, you know? And I think that Enes Kanter, however you say his name, and Ibaka, obviously, I mean, that's a heck of a core. And in a 7-game series, who knows? But I do feel that if they do match up against the Warriors or the Spurs, I mean, we've seen this team beat the Spurs before at a much younger stage of their development. And now they know who they are. They're much more comfortable with their roles. Everybody's healthy, basically. And I think that, to me, the Thunder are actually the more terrifying team in the West than the Spurs. And I think that the way that it's going to play out is going to be Thunder Warriors in the conference finals, honestly.
Hmm. Oof.
Nate, what do you think?
It's like what Bram said. Anytime you have a guy who can put up a triple-double 3 times in a row, and a guy who can score, you know, what did Durant have on the Warriors like last season? Like 30 points and a half. I mean, those guys are so explosive that I think they are a threat in any 7-game series situation to come out on top. I think where their issue is going to be is interesting because Welcome to Loud City, SB Nation's Thunder side, has been writing about this quite a bit lately. Is their defense is slipping a little bit? There's some concern about how some of the lineups they're putting on the floor going big. The issue is going to be how they defend a team like the Warriors or even the Spurs in over the long term. You know, I would not be surprised to see them beat the Warriors on Saturday. I don't think that'll happen. I would say the Warriors are going to win at home again, but in a 7-game series, if they're healthy and you slip up, you have an off night. I mean, that's a team that will definitely take you down. Do I trust guys like Deion Waiters playing minutes? Nope. but that's, you know, I mean, that's what separates the Warriors from most other teams except the Spurs. And the Warriors don't have a guy in their rotation who I look at like, man, you have to give him minutes. I feel like Deion Waiters is one of those guys. Like, I think if he starts to figure it out, and he has some good games, no doubt. But if he has a good game, a strong game against the Warriors, I think it's going to be, he can be a dangerous player, and he can be the guy that kind of maybe is their X factor that gives them a third weapon there. But
I don't know, it's
a tough team. I mean, how do you guard Durant and Westbrook? You guard those guys. Either one is a pick and roll threat. Either one can shoot. Westbrook's going to drive to the basket, and he's just like constantly angry at the rim, like it talked about his mother. And Durant can shoot from 30 feet. I mean, so it's like you just can't guard that team. And I think it's just a matter of does their offense under the new coach. I mean, that's something else to talk about. Maybe with someone who's more familiar with the team. But with a new coach, a first year coach, is there something else? Like Apricot talks a lot in his one play posts about how, the Warriors are kind of reaching the next level of their offense. So is there something in Billy Donovan's offense that we haven't yet seen from the Thunder that could show up in the postseason that we won't see on Saturday? I think that's another question that I'll probably be looking at Saturday a little bit more intently to figure out where the options are and what potential they have to grow.
I think that the Thunder, there's no team built like them in the whole league, obviously, where they're so top heavy and then they just can't back it up, I think that their ceiling is as high as any other team in the league, including the Warriors, when Durant and Westbrook are playing at the top of their abilities. But when they go out of the game and it's just their bench and it's just like, what is going on? And, that's the thing that the Warriors have definitely, and again, shout out Bob Myers, have built, having depth obviously is something that plagues that team. So,
yeah. And they're kind of a really, just like the Warriors, really interesting what if team where what if they hadn't had all those injuries like at bad times. Durant's gotten some bad foot injuries and kind of derailed like what potentially could have been. People were looking at the Thunder a number of years ago as like them versus the Heat in every finals for the next 5 years.
Right. What if they hadn't traded Harden?
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest what if.
Yeah, huge. What if Jeremy Lamb had developed into the player that like Draymond Green developed into, right? Like it's crazy how many pieces fell into place for the Warriors and how they just kind of didn't for the Thunder. And that happens to a lot of teams. That's what people talk about when they talk about luck, I think, in development of a team or in a team season. Warriors got lucky by everything. Kind of, what if David Lee hadn't gotten hurt? Would Draymond Green have gotten those minutes? Like, you just don't even know. But it's interesting that they seem to be, they were so close, right? Like they were there and they still are. And, they're not dead out of the water, but it's just crazy that like, it almost feels like their window closed a little bit just because of how good the Warriors are right now and how good the Spurs got again, or continue to be and kind of have reloaded and changed what they're doing again. But, I mean, they're second in the league in offense right now, just behind the Warriors, 13th in defense. So I think that's a good point that, like, yeah, you never know what their offense can do, and Donovan might do something different than we've seen before, but defense is probably going to be the key for them.
Yeah. What's interesting about their defense, especially against a team like the Warriors, is they don't force a lot of turnovers. And I think the one thing you want to be able to do against the Warriors, a team that could – you even saw it against the Wizards last night in the third quarter. Probably what made it ugly is the Wizards were able to play in the passing lanes extremely well, get a lot of deflections and some steals. The Warriors are a team that's turnover prone. We can try to spin around that and wish it didn't happen that way. But they're turnover prone in the way that they get overconfident sometimes. It's just what it is. I think it's because, you're so good. We talked about it before. But also they pass the ball a lot. They do a lot of ball movement and they're doing a lot of really complex offensive schemes, and turnovers are the result, when you're trying to do some of the things they're doing. And so as a Thunder being a team that doesn't create a lot of turnovers, doesn't do a whole lot of that, I'd be interested to know how well they'll match up against, how well they'll be able to contain the Warriors offense. I think that would be maybe something they'd have to defensively, I think it'll be a challenge for them, more of a challenge than people are maybe giving credit for. But we'll see. I mean, their offense is so good, it might not matter.
I'm really looking forward to it. It's crazy that that the Warriors haven't played them by now, and it is one of those. You know, the Warriors' rest of season schedule is like very home heavy, but also very Oklahoma City and Spurs heavy, and it's going to be really interesting going down the stretch to, you know, play these top teams and kind of maybe get a better feel out of where we stand. And we saw what happened with the Spurs, but you know, the whole resting of Duncan, you know, you never really know what's going to happen with injuries and kind of how coaches decide to play a team that they know they're probably going to have to face in the playoffs down the stretch. But this is just the first of many, and I'm definitely looking forward to it Saturday at like 6 o'clock. And we should wrap it up. This has gone long, and it's been great discussion. So thanks, guys. Remember to, if you're listening, just subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already done so. iTunes, Stitcher, listen on blogtalkradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Golden State of Mindcast.
Say hi to Spring's most amazing style steal at Old Navy. One day only, today. Women's tanks are just $2. And don't forget to come in now to redeem your super cash. Hurry in. High fashion, Old Navy. Valid 4/29, limit 5 per customer. Select styles in stores only.